Welkom bij Mensen in de Maak.
Ik ben Sophie.
Ik ben Tamer.
Tamer is cis.
Sophie is trans.
Tamer heeft een handicap.
Sophie heeft dat niet.
En wij gaan samen
een kindje maken.
Als dat lukt.
Hoi allemaal.
Hoi.
Vandaag hebben we een speciale aflevering. We interviewden de meemama's. De meemama's zijn Nele en Jo, een Vlaams-Brits lesbisch stel dat via hun eigen blog een IVF-proces vastlegde. En ze hadden daarbij veel geluk. De eerste poging werd Nele gelijk zwanger.
En we weten dat het voor veel luisteraars, die net als wij kampen met onvruchtbaarheid, best wel pijnlijk en confronterend kan zijn om te horen over mensen die het wel is gelukt om zwanger te worden. Ook wij hebben bij tijd en wijle wel eens te maken met dit soort gevoelens. En dan merken we dat we dat hele onderwerp het liefst uit de weg gaan. Geldt dat nou ook voor jou? Denk er dan eventjes over na of je deze aflevering wel echt wil luisteren en ook of je hem nu wil luisteren. We hebben er echt alle begrip voor als je een weekje overslaat.
Dat gezegd hebbende, we zijn heel blij met dit mooie gesprek. Net als wij kozen de meemama's ervoor om naar het buitenland uit te wijken voor IVF. Maar wel om andere redenen waarover ze uitgebreid zullen vertellen.
Nele die vertelt verder over haar pijnlijke ervaringen met overstimulatie en over de heftige misselijkheid waar ze last van had in het eerste trimester van de zwangerschap. Oh ja, en ze vertellen hoe tarot hen hielp om de juiste zaaddonor te kiezen.
Een mooie aflevering dus, waarin we ook veel hebben gelachen.
Ja, we waren behoorlijk giechelig.
Ja, jij vooral.
Ja, dat klopt. Sorry, ik af en toe bij het luisteren, dan moest ik echt een beetje cringen. Ja, en ook, de geluidskwaliteit was niet geweldig goed. Het blijft toch een Skype-gesprek. Maar als je een tijdje luistert, dan ben je er echt wel gauw genoeg aan. En dan is het volgens mij prima te doen.
Dus, we wensen jullie veel plezier bij het luisteren. En volgende week zijn we alweer terug met een nieuwe aflevering.
Yay!
Oké.
Zo.
Meemama's. Can I call you that?
Yeah, that sounds.
Can you introduce yourselves a bit?
I'm Jo. I'm from Stoke-on-Trent in the UK.
I'm Nele. I am from Ghent. And I am studying to be a therapist. So I'm nearly finished with my coursework. So
cool. Like a psychotherapist or?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
End of June, so I should graduate. Hi, Kat. Which obviously is good timing because I am pregnant, almost 16 weeks now.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. It's very happy. So we got extremely lucky and we got pregnant on the first try.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool. So how long have you known that you want to have a child together?
Do you want to start the story?
Okay.
So I'm still of a restaurant. And Nele just basically turned to me and was like, by the time I finish my degree, I want to have a baby. And I was like, oh, okay. Am I involved in this? when was that? Was that a couple of years ago, Mom?
Yeah, we weren't even together that long yet.
Yeah, I know.
We lived in Spain, like, yeah. 2 years ago.
Yeah, so we'd maybe been together about 6 months or something.
Yeah, you see, I had a plan. I wanted to graduate and have a baby, so.
Yeah, well, it's a good plan. Yeah.
And I think in the end, it's been a really good thing because, like, it's taken us so much time to work out exactly the way we wanted to do this. So it's good that we started thinking about it as early as we did.
Yeah.
It did take 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
From beginning to end, from beginning to think about it and research to being pregnant now. So
that's quite a long time, actually. Yeah. Just a little pause. I'm going to try to put your sound a little bit lower. I have to pause the recording a bit. Okay, we're on again. yeah, where were we? So it took 2 years to do the whole thing. That's really quite some time. So how did that process go of deciding how you were going to do it? And actually, Joe, were you in? Because like Nayla had a plan, but like, how did you feel about it?
I'm a bit shocked at first, but that's how our relationship tends to go. Like Nayla makes a grand statement and I'm shocked, and then I have to go away and process a little bit, and then we come back and have a big conversation about it. So
that's how we got together as well. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I told her I was in love with her, and then she was like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's awesome. I really like that.
I mean, I've always known that I didn't want to be pregnant, so I'd never really given that much thought to having kids, because I didn't want them enough that I would have wanted them like as a single person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, once I started to think about it and thinking about doing it to others, yeah, but definitely became something that I got really excited about and really wanted to be part of and to do together.
Yeah, nice.
And yeah, Tamar made a list of questions to guide us through the interview a little bit. And we wonder,
this one you need to
yeah. How, well, after Nayla announced her big wish, how the process went from deciding how to go about
with donor stuff and everything,
donor stuff and where to do the treatment, things like that.
Well, the first thing I had in mind was that the phase had to be meer dan gewenst. No, the meer dan gewenst.
Meer
dan gewenst. Yeah. For that organization. Yeah.
You could post like a little ad in there looking for a donor, you know, lesbian couple looking for somebody. So that I had already seen that originally. I was kind of thinking about going that way, about finding a donor, maybe somebody we knew or got to know through that. Hmm. And they had a speed dating event to meet up with donors. So I went by myself because Joe was in Liverpool then, and I went to meet all these donors, these potential baby daddies. And it was terribly awkward. It was, oh God. I met some people where I was very, very sure I did not want to mess the donors.
Oh, that must be weird. Yeah.
I mean, one man literally said, I want to spread my seed.
No!
No, no.
I was just, no, no, thank you. No, I don't. No.
It's kind of funny that there's like men walking around who really like want to spread their seeds. That's the thing.
I can tell you. But yes, I did meet one man that I really liked at the speed dating, sorry, cats. And so I met up with him again. He didn't live too far from Ghent as well, which was handy. Mm-hmm. I met up again in a cafe, and then we did a talk through Skype, all of us, several talks.
Yeah.
And we were kind of really considering him because he really was a very kind man, and we got along really well. But then we downloaded a co-parenting contract from some website online and went through it bit by bit to figure out how it would look, us all co-parenting a child. Mm-hmm. And I think then we really got shocked thinking about how many possible arguments there were and legal implications mainly, also for you.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have had parental rights unless he was willing to sign his away, which wasn't something that he was looking to do, so.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so it just didn't really fit right with us in the end, which was a shame because we could see the possibility of how it could work well for some people.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It was really important to us that we both had legal rights over our child.
Yeah.
In case, like, you know, let's say that I were to die or something.
Yeah.
That it would have been his child legally and she would have had nothing to say in it. And just thinking through those scenarios made us really worried about it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So yeah, I think after that, there was like one big weekend, we went through the whole contract. And then we just sat down together and we're like, this is not going to work.
Yeah. And how did the donor feel about it? Like, was he also...
We're still in contact with him, actually. He still sent an email to ask us how we're doing. And
oh, nice.
Yeah, we're pregnant and everything, yeah.
So he understood.
Yes, yeah. And he's a lovely man.
I mean, yeah.
You know, it's just the implications of it were too far-reaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah, so we looked on beyond that. I think we went online to a sperm bank.
Yeah, some of the strangest online shopping we've ever done.
I've actually looked one up lately just because I was listening to a podcast about like sperm donation or anything. And I just got so curious. So I Googled sperm bank and then there was one really big one. And then all I had to do was like make a user account and then I could like just look at all the sperm donors.
The baby photos.
Yeah, the baby photos and like all psychological descriptions and stuff.
It's probably the one we ended up using. We used Cryos in the end.
Okay, is that like a really big one?
Yes.
Like European?
Famous ones.
Yeah.
In Denmark.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so it's that... We went through those profiles and we're like, oh, okay, I guess legally this would make a lot more sense for us.
Yeah.
And then we needed a clinic to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you decide?
Like, do you look at the looks, like, or do you look at like the psychological stuff, or just like more like, okay, this is like a nice person that I think would make a nice baby.
I think from the first time we looked at that website to the point where we actually chose a donor, it was, God, a year or 9 months or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. And you had a lot more patience about going through all the profiles than I do. My attention span is not that long.
So. Oh, yeah?
So you were like... doing the big trawl and kind of narrowing down some options, and then we
had
discussion together.
We went to Barcelona together for a weekend,
yes.
And I brought a list of sperm. And we scored them all like independently.
Yeah, and then compared to see how our opinions had matched up.
Oh, like very schematically.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, interview, does it sound like a nice person? Did they write a good letter?
Oh, yeah.
General impression, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you match on your most favorite donor?
Yes.
I think so.
Well, we ended up with two favorites.
Yeah, that were very hard to separate.
Yeah. And then we did what any good lesbian couple would do. We asked our tarot cards.
The tarot card chose the donor.
Nice.
Yes, beautiful story.
Yeah, so we had two that we could not separate them. They were both really good options. They seemed like really good people doing it for the right reasons.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we got our deck of tarot cards and each drew one card, like, for each donor and then turned them over. And the result was, like, really definitive in favor of one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was the one we went for. It was all success and victory, and really, we need this man.
So you're really happy that you didn't like put the other donor to the right end of the other donor on the table or something, that the cards came out differently?
Yeah, I don't know. We're not really that superstitious, but at that point we couldn't decide, so anything would have
done really. It's a bit like Inimini-Mitte, but then a little bit more like advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for us.
But yeah,
nice.
Analysis of the sperm as well, and it was actually really, really high quality too. We got it from our clinic. So
oh, cool.
It was good sperm.
Nice.
And how long did you have to wait for the sperm to go to get to the clinic?
Yeah, like how does that work? Like, or did you first have to choose the clinic?
Yes, first we had to choose the clinic because not every clinic works with every sperm bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was one of the problems with staying in Belgium, actually. I'm sure we're getting to that.
Oh, but, really?
We really wanted an open donor so our child can find out later who it is and maybe meet him if they want to. And in Belgium, that's still illegal.
Is an open donor illegal in Belgium?
Yes. Yeah. I know it's the other way around in that Netherlands.
Yeah.
No, it's not the other way around.
Yeah. In the Netherlands, you have to have a donor that you can eventually contact if you want to.
That's true. Entirely... Totally anonymous donor. No. Yeah. I don't know if how the clinics work with, in case there's a totally anonymous donor.
I think they just don't do it. It's illegal.
Okay. Yeah. It's no longer legal in the Netherlands because there was this big lawsuit about it in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Kids demanded to know who it was, their anonymous donor.
Oh.
So, but yeah, here it's still illegal. So.
Wow. Oh, okay. Good to know. So then we get to like the next thing. It's like you had this whole journey of choosing the right clinic that you wrote a lot about on your blog, which we thought very interesting. So can you tell us about that? Like you started out in Ghent, right?
Yes, it's good where we live, so that seemed the simplest.
Yeah, and it's also got a really good reputation, so...
Yeah.
So we went for the appointment. It ended up being quite a long day that we were there, because we had to have an initial meeting with the gynecologist. We had a meeting with a psychologist that lasted, was it an hour and a half?
Mm-hmm.
And it was all, we felt very much like we were kind of on trial. Mm-hmm. Like that they were either going to be, because they said, all of these people who you are meeting, we will all sit down and discuss your case and choose whether we're going to accept you or not.
Yeah.
It was very intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did they do that with all couples or just the LGBT ones?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
So they weren't even clear about that?
No, not really.
Oh, that's weird. So when you made the appointment, did you immediately, was the first appointment one in which you also had to see the psychologist or did...
Yes, it's all in one day.
Oh, that's interesting. Can we spill the beans yet? Yeah. So we made an appointment with Ghent and we are just seeing the doctor, not a psychologist.
It's at 4 in the afternoon?
4 in the afternoon. It's just the doctor's appointment.
And do you know whether you're going to have to see the psychologist?
No, because we asked in the first email and they said, for now, you don't have to see a psychologist. So it's very unclear if we have to see one later in the trajectory or if they don't know yet. Or
I wonder if it's because it's both of your genetic material that you're using.
Yeah.
Not the focus on the psychologist thing was talking about the donor and you thought all of this through and the implications. Of
And
I do know a single woman needs to see the psychologist 3 times.
3 times.
Oh, and you had to see them 1 time.
Yes. I guess you have to prove that you have a support network, I think, as a single woman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's the same here in the Netherlands, but I don't know. It differs per clinic if it's a maatschappelijk werker.
A social worker.
Social worker or a psychologist.
Yeah.
And the number of meetings, there's no... rule about that.
Yeah, because when our first clinic that we wanted to go to, we also had to see a social worker, and then we didn't want to, and then eventually we sort of sued them.
We made a case in the Human Rights Council
because we didn't agree. But then the difference is that they said we want all people who are not standard or normal to go see a social worker. And it's, for example, also if you are in a financially poor situation.
Yeah, so, they can...
All marginalized people.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we have also have experience. So, but how did that conversation go with the psychologist?
It was hard. She asked some really difficult questions. Like, have you ever had a depression, for example? Have you ever had any mental problems, any physical problems? The one that surprised us the most at the time was, will there be enough of a male influence in your child's life?
Classic.
Yeah, and like, you know, kind of which people will be there? Can you prove it? So I remember we kind
can
of...
you prove it?
Yeah, I like vaguely lied.
I remember like panicking and talking about my dad. Yeah.
We'd be like, oh, we have so many male friends, so many, all the time.
Awful.
Yeah, I think I would do the same. I've already like, I'm sometimes, because I know your story, I'm already like thinking like, if we have to go there, okay, I'll just tell them that we see my brother all the time.
Yes, do that.
Yeah.
Every of us has a brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, they asked like information about me that we weren't expecting, like because I'm not, you know, I'm not donating any genetic material to this process. I wasn't really prepared for them to ask like questions about my height or weight or health or and things like that, which they did go into. So
yeah, that's so strange.
But so it felt a bit like, you know, they're working off a script because they're used to with straight couples, I guess.
So did you feel fat shamed?
I don't know. It felt more just for their records, but I don't know if it would have been a factor if I was weird. I don't know.
Well, but yeah, we know from people who were denied treatment because of weight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's strange to go into that like physical factor while you're not physically involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think about the donor, our main problem with it was that we were not be allowed to decide anything at all. And it would have to be an anonymous donor. So we could fill in a little form saying...
And like, they would choose for you.
Yes.
Ah,
but they could not guarantee that any preference would be filled in.
And your preference was like hair color, eye color.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was pretty
much it, yes. And then I was also on like a forum with people talking about it, and I did read some complaints from people saying that and ended up having children who didn't even remotely look like them, had like dark hair and dark eyes, or completely the other way around, who felt that like their preferences were really not like taken into account at all.
Oh,
that's really strange.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't expect that
in a way.
Yeah,
and then the fact it was completely anonymous too. For me, that was a very strange thought that I would have no say whatsoever in what genetic material I would carry in my body.
Yeah,
it's just I found it very freaky, and I don't know. I had a hard time with that.
And I think we both felt it was important that if any future child wanted to find out where the other half of their genetics comes from, that they should have that right.
Yeah.
So I think for us, that was just kind of the end of...
To Belgium?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Donor siblings as well, because there's a very good website, the Donor Network, where you can track down whether other people have also used the sperm from the same donor.
Oh, yeah.
You can meet each other later if they want to.
Yeah.
Which is also seemed interesting to me, just in case if our kid wants to do that, they have the option to do it.
But also not available in Belgium.
No, because it's anonymous.
Yeah, that's right.
Horrible. And but then you had to go look for another clinic.
Yeah.
That was in summer, and I went a bit research crazy.
I know the feeling.
And this, I was like, okay, which countries can we get to? I think that the Netherlands is one of the first countries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, then decided against it, partially because of cost and partially because of clinic options.
Yeah.
There's for us, there would have been, you have to do so many IUIs first.
Yeah, so that's actually another question. I was thinking, like, was it clear from you have done IVF, so was it clear from the beginning that you would need IVF? And not,
no. No, not at all. So I looked at different options. One of them was to just have the sperm ordered from a sperm bank, have it shipped to our house, and just do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Another option would be an IUI, and then the third option would be IVF.
Yeah.
But in the end, it just came down to the cost and the percentages of it succeeding.
Yeah.
We have this much money. We can try at home 3 times. We can try 2 IUIs or 1 IVF. And I just compared all the percentages, and IVF is that much more of a succeeding percentage than the rest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you also have like you don't have an unlimited amount of sperm, so you the sperm costs a lot of money.
I remember, can I say, our sperm was 1,650 euros for one vial.
For one rietje?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot. That's like one go.
Yeah. And of course, with IVF, one vial is more than enough to do it.
But yeah.
So it was finance versus what we could get for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not. So actually, it wasn't that you have some kind of fertility problem that you know of. It's just, interesting.
Yeah, because I think before we looked at the numbers, you didn't want to do IVF just because it's so heavy medication-wise.
Yeah.
We wanted to do it as naturally as we could, but then the numbers just completely turned it around for us.
Yeah, and I think that's one of my main recommendations I would want to give to anyone researching this is look up the succession percentages of your age, of your like HMA levels. Just look at all the math behind it and then figure out what your real chances are of conceiving for each method.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good advice.
Because I know it's really like mathy, but I love doing it because it gives me a real insight as to what we'll actually be doing and like how much you can hope for if you do some techniques.
Yeah, so where were we? Sophie's pointing at something. What are you pointing at?
Where we were.
Where we were. No, but we were in looked for the in the Netherlands.
Clinic.
But that, in the Netherlands, you have to do IUI first before IVF, so that was not an option. And then?
I think we looked into Denmark as well. Copenhagen is known as quite a cheap destination.
Okay.
One of our main things was because we wanted to have the open sperm donor that excluded lots of countries that were quite cheap. For example, Spain is a really good fertility destination, Cyprus, Czech Republic, but all of those have anonymous donors. So we could go to any of them. So then we ended up with either the Netherlands, which we didn't want to do because of the IUIs, Denmark or the UK.
All right.
And I had it in my head that the UK would be extremely expensive. But then in the end, when we compared it, it really wasn't. Yeah. So, and also because she is from the UK.
Yeah, it makes a difference. So UK law applies to me. So for a child to be recognised as like my child on the birth certificate, under UK law, if we're not married, which we're not, the child has to have been conceived in a UK registered fertility. So it just makes, it was another point in favour of going to the UK because then it makes recognition of the child a lot easier.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's important to... And another... so many laws that you have to...
Oh, God, yes. We became experts in those 2 years.
Yeah, you're like you have no idea before.
No, I think that's part of why we wrote it all down in the blog. We couldn't ask anyone else because no one else knew all these things. We had to just figure them all out by ourselves.
Yeah.
And then, well, then we went to the UK, and then another thing they did there for IVF was egg sharing. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah. There's some clinics in the Netherlands, just maybe one or two that also use egg sharing, and in a way it's a bit controversial, but I don't know how that was in the UK.
I wouldn't say it's controversial.
No, I don't think so. I mean, so what they do in the UK is they can't give you any money or any incentive to do it financially, but what they do do is if you do an egg sharing cycle, then they is it half the cost of your
So egg sharing means that you're donating some of your eggs to other couples.
To one other couple, usually.
To one other couple, yeah.
So I was quite interested in that because we also had my egg reserve levels tested and they were really good still for my age.
Nice.
So I knew I had lots of eggs to spread around the world.
Spread your eggs around the world.
I can spread my eggs. Yeah, I think we quite like the idea of helping a couple who really needed eggs for whatever reason, couldn't have their own. Plus, you know, also financially, it was a good benefit. So we really looked into that. We ended up going with Bornholm Clinic for that first video.
Yeah, so we found Bornholm Clinic that offered to do that. So we went along to them. We again had to have a session with a counsellor. So yeah, we ended up getting those questions down by the end of it. And we went along to the clinic and we had to have... So one thing you have to have done if you're going to do egg sharing is they have to test your genetics to make sure you're not passing on potential issues to somebody else. But one thing that I think ended up kind of souring the experience for us was that they weren't transparent about the costs involved. So we ended up getting put on the spot after having travelled to the UK and travelled to the clinic, told that these tests that they wanted to do were going to cost around £1,000, which we prepared for and hadn't budgeted for.
Oh.
But we were felt under real pressure to do it on the day, and in the end we did do it.
Oh.
We probably shouldn't have in hindsight. But yeah, so that kind of really soured our experience with them. We also, they ended up hitting us with another bill that we didn't expect, which we had to fight. They told us that another cost would be coming further down the line. So in the end, we just felt like we couldn't, we just lost trust with them, I think, in the end.
And we kept on asking them for a total, like, just ask us, just tell us the complete price this whole thing is going to cost. And they refused to answer again, again, and again. And that's like, we can't do this with these people because they're going to keep us hitting us with random bills. And
yeah,
that's what we are.
Yeah, because, like, the finances, it's, like, a real thing. You cannot just, like, be like, oh, it's okay. I mean, it's got real consequences.
Yeah, we sadly were not endlessly rich, so we really had to think about this. So, sadly, that was the end of the egg-sharing adventure.
Oh, pity.
Yeah. Looking back on it, though, they told us the doses of medication they would have given me at Bornholm, and they were extremely high. So knowing what we know now, I probably would have ended up in hospital with what they were. But, so yeah, then we looked on, and then we found ABC.
Yeah, and I think a big draw for us with ABC is that they market themselves as being transparent about their costs. That's one of their big selling points because so many other clinics just aren't upfront about it. So
yeah,
it was kind of a relief to just contact them and be given like a, here's an information sheet with all of our prices. This is what you will pay. And then we knew and we could plan. So we went to see them. We didn't have to see a counsellor with them because we told them we'd seen other counsellors and they were like, oh, that's fine. We pleased about that. And they were really nice. And yeah, we had a much better feeling about them. And they were in central London as well, which was a lot more convenient for us.
To travel to.
Yeah.
And they also did the scan straight away, which they never had done at Bourne Hall, which also worried me at the time. Just, yeah. And it was, the promise is true. Like, we only did pay exactly what it says on the website.
Good.
So the whole thing. So. Yeah.
And they're much lighter on the medication as well, because their emphasis is more on the quality of the eggs that they're collecting, whereas Bourne Hall, the focus was on numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was about 1/3 of the amount of medication they ended up giving me at ABC.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really... So can I ask you which medication did you use?
Well, do you remember? It was Bempola.
Yeah.
The normal, and then the cetrotides, and then the trigger, but I didn't trigger with Ovitral. That was the other one.
Okay, so no Menopur, because I've had Menopur, so I would know about the doses for that, but yeah.
No, so, okay. But with 1/3 of the dose, I ended up being hyperstimulated. So I had many eggs with that tiny dose. They were quite impressed with me at the clinic.
Yeah, but I guess like usually they get couples who have fertility issues, but you don't, like, probably, like, you never know, but probably you don't have that, so.
Yeah, but we knew that, so it was on the lowest possible dose, and I still
had
50 eggs.
Wow. Maybe for the listeners, so overstimulation syndrome is that, can you explain it, like, what it is and how it feels?
Oh God, it's like there's a leaden balloon like at the bottom of your stomach. You have to pee every 5 seconds.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't eat anymore. I was extremely nauseous. I had severe headaches. I couldn't walk fully upright because of the weight down here.
You're like sort of pregnant looking.
Yes, but it's worse than being pregnant. So yeah, it felt quite severe. I was quite severely ill.
Yeah, really sick by the end of it.
So they do talk about it in 3 levels. You have a light overstimulation, then medium, and then a severe one. So I went from light to medium at the end.
Oh yeah.
And then so you grow all your little eggs, and then they decide you have to give the trigger shot for the egg collection. So at that point, they decided that I was too overstimulated to do a normal trigger shot. Because for those of hormones they put into your system with the idea to then place back an embryo at the end. So they decided not to do that for me and to do a freeze-all cycle.
Yeah.
Which, if we look back on it now, it was definitely the right decision because I was very ill.
Yeah. A bit upset at the time because we had it in our heads that we were going to come back to Belgium and you would be pregnant until proven otherwise.
Yeah. But
we weren't, so it was, yeah, I think we were a bit disappointed and I had to adjust our expectations, but they definitely did the right thing health-wise.
Yeah. But that's really so difficult to deal with, these like waiting and like disappointments, and then like you're like so focused and then you have to wait more, and
yeah, it was hard. But then I found the egg collection surgery also quite hard, probably because I had so many eggs. So,
yeah.
How long did it take?
Only, like, the actual surgery, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah.
It was fast, so I was just kind of waiting in a little curtain.
Did you go under?
Yeah, so you have to have someone with you because they fully put you under, so you have to have someone there to be with you and take you home afterwards, or to a hotel in our case.
Yeah.
So yeah, we both were there, and then they took you off, and I just had to sit and wait with a cup of awful coffee, like composing like text messages in my terrible Dutch in my head. Your mom and friends to let them know how it was going.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, the Netherlands, they don't let you, they usually don't let you go under, like, they often give a roesje, you know what it is? Like, I don't know how I say it in English.
I don't know either.
A mild sedation, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But like with me, they didn't even do that.
So I've had regular.
two procedures, like without any sedation, just pain, just like verdoving. Well, plaatselijke verdoving I had, but not like, and it still hurts. So.
Full anesthetic. I'm so glad that was not me.
Yeah. No, I don't want to do it again.
No, but if with overstimulation, that would be cruel.
That would be like super, super cruel. Yeah.
Because with the number of accessible for you, it was only 5 minutes.
Yeah, like I never came close to overstimulation, even though I both times I thought that I was all the time fearing that I had it because it still hurts like a lot. And I just felt like really weird, but that's just part, I think it's just part of normal IVF and maybe also in combination with my chronic illness that it, like, I think the IVF exacerbates my chronic illness. So
yeah, it's a monster dose of medication anyway in your system.
So. Yeah. So the logistics, how did you do it? So you stayed in a hotel, how long?
11 days or something.
Yeah. We had to be there because they were doing like the scans every other day. So yeah, we were camped out in a travel lodge. It's a very cheap hotel chain.
Ah, yeah.
So after the, you came out of the egg collection, you were like really nauseous and yeah, it took a while for you to come back around. But then once you were, like they kind of rushed us out a little bit, didn't they? There wasn't much time for hanging around. And then we got this taxi ride, which felt like it took an absolute lifetime to get back to the hotel. And then were we there in London another day before we went back?
No, 2 or 3 days. And I went back by myself with the Eurostar with a suitcase, and it was horrific because I was and I really wasn't allowed to just lift the suitcase. I had to ask for help, and nobody wanted to help me because I didn't look like I was sick.
Yeah.
We hadn't realized it was going to be as bad as it was.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to be in that much pain still, but I really was a couple days after still. I was walking like while holding my stomach, like step by step by step, because every shock hurt my stomach. So yeah, not the best plan to travel right after that kind of thing. But yeah, I recovered. I think it took me about 2 weeks, and then I felt completely fine again.
Oh, luckily.
So yeah, how did we do it? Lots of trips back and forth with the Eurostar for the early appointments and then for our embryo transfer in the end.
So the Eurostar, is this like, is that like the cheap bus line?
It's a train.
The train.
From Brussels to...
That's okay.
It's 2 hours from Brussels to London St. Pancras.
That's really quite okay, actually.
That's why it was doable for us.
Yeah.
Traveling to Ghent from here is
It's also 2 hours. Yeah.
It was actually more difficult for me to get to the clinics in the Netherlands back when I like researched it, because it's more difficult with buses and everything than to just rock up in central London and you're there immediately.
That's right. I didn't think about that. Yeah, so and what is it like to like stay in a hotel and be in London for IVF? Does it like feel like a semi-holiday, or is it not relaxed enough for that?
I wanted it to be, but I got sick really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
All days of medication, I was already quite sick. So we couldn't go out to eat or do much.
I think we probably actually did do quite a lot, even though you felt terrible. It was like, I'm either going to be in the hotel room and feel terrible, or we can go and see this show and I'll feel terrible. So... like there was a lot of like sneaking out of theatres for bathroom breaks. But yeah, I mean, it was not as fun as we were hoping it was gonna be.
Yeah, pity. Yeah.
You had the embryo transfer.
Oh, yeah.
But before that they first put all the egg cells in the freezer. And
no, actually, they put them together with the sperm first.
Already, okay.
Became embryos before freezing them. So those were really exciting days because we got a phone call every day.
Oh, yeah. Every day.
Yeah, or every other day with some to let us know how our little embryos were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so exciting because every day we were waiting for it and then being like, oh God, how many will there still be there? And are they still okay? Are they growing okay?
Mm-hmm. And after how many days did they, were they cryopreserved?
We had 1 day three preserved already. And then five preserved on day five and then two more on day six.
Yeah.
So we had 8 total.
Okay. Oh,
nice.
Which is a very high number, extremely high for the clinic where we were at.
Oh, yeah, because they had the slow doses.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we had been told maybe 1 or 2 if we were lucky.
Oh.
That was our goal, basically. We were hoping maybe just 1, you know, then our cycle wouldn't have been a waste if we could try just once. Maybe an extra one would be great. And then we were told it was 8.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were really relieved because it means that unless something went really wrong, that we knew you would never have to do an IVF cycle again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have those chances now to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess also we're thinking if we want more kids than 1,
yeah,
then we can go back and use those. So we have invested all this money, but basically now we have many frozen babies. So we can have like half a football team if we want.
Yeah, and also I read on your blog or something that every time that you are in London, you think about all your like frozen embryos.
They're in a clinic right by St. Paul's Cathedral, so every time we're there, we think about our little babies.
Yeah. How have they been doing in the freezer? Nice. Yeah, so and then you had the transfer once you were... Like, was it in your next cycle already, or did you have to have a wait cycle in between?
There was a wait cycle in between. So after the egg collection, I had a bleed, and then I had to wait for a cycle, and then the cycle after that.
Yeah.
Which took forever because my body refused to menstruate on cue. So I think I get so stressed and so nervous, it just doesn't happen. So I had was it a 52-day cycle?
Yeah. Wow, it's so long. Were you like stressed about like if it would work within a regular cycle?
Well, the thing is, I don't have ovulation in my regular cycles, so we couldn't do a natural frozen embryo transfer. So where you check your natural cycle and then pop it in at the right time. So we had to do it with medication.
Ah, yeah. Is it like that you have PCOS?
No, actually not, even though I do wonder about it because I was so hyperstimulated and I have...
Yeah.
So I don't know. I have some of the things of it for it, but I don't have a diagnosis of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah. So we went with the medicated cycle.
Yeah.
And it was on the 15th of February, I remember. That was our transfer day. That was, very nervous.
Yeah,
how did it go?
More straightforward than the egg collection, though. It was, we were in and out really fast, really, in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the transfers.
It's really quick.
It's
in and out. Yeah. And you went to a comedy club, right? Afterwards.
Yes, because like it's good if you have like laughter afterwards, if you feel really positive and you're laughing, you're enjoying yourself. So I think that's also a tip for people out there. Make sure you just...
Yeah, maybe we will try it next time.
Yeah,
because it's researched, right? That it helps.
Yes, it definitely is. They did trials on it. So I don't know if it's the actual laughing or just feeling good or thinking about something else or whatever.
But... Yeah.
If it works, it works.
Nice. So, and then you did your test. Yes. After 2 long weeks.
Oh, we tested early. Yeah, I couldn't wait anymore, and it was the weekend. And
yeah.
You were home for the first morning pee, so that was important. So we talked about it in advance. We were like, okay, maybe it's too early. Maybe we won't see any lines yet. Or maybe, you know, it'll be a really, really faint line. You know, we discussed it. We're like, let's not have too high expectations of this. We'll see. And I dipped it in the pee. And
it was like, bam, two lines, pregnant.
Oh, wow. It's like right in your face.
Yeah. We had no time to doubt it. It just appeared.
Nice.
And then we did another one because you never know.
Yeah, yeah. And the other one was the same?
Yeah, immediately.
Nice. Oh, wow.
So then you just started your day and went about, or?
Yeah, what do you do? Like, we haven't reached that point. So how does it feel? Like, what?
Oh, I cried. I felt so overwhelmed in the moment. It just kind of hits you like, this is real. It's really, really real. And then, I cried. You didn't as much?
No, I think it took a bit longer to sink in for me. Yeah, it was a bit surreal. I think because I got it in my head, like, oh, it's still early. We probably won't get a result yet. Or if we do, it probably won't be sure. So I think I didn't quite believe it still. It took a while.
Yeah.
I ended up doing like 5 tests total, I think. You know, just in case I wasn't pregnant the next day or the day after that or the day after that.
Yeah, that's right. It can still, like, if it's that early, you can still lose it. Like,
yes, yeah. And we were very conscious of that as well because of the blog, and we ended up telling quite a lot of people right at the beginning. But we always had to say, like, look, it's really early. There's still a high chance it will go wrong. Yeah, it's hard for yourself as well because you don't want to get too attached just yet, just in case it goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the blog you wrote about the horrible, horrible first 3 months of pregnancy.
Yeah, I had a hard time. And one of the things was for me, like, I would go to doctors and I would tell them how bad it was. I would see my midwife, I would tell her how bad it was. I'd see the gynecologist, and none of them took it all that seriously. They were just like, oh, you know, have a ginger biscuit, or oh, drink a bit of Coke, you'll feel better. And I would literally be like, look, I haven't been able to keep fluids down for 24 hours. I'm on these heavy medications for IVF still, so it was very important that I took my medications to maintain the pregnancy. And I'm like, I'm worried I can't keep them in. Or like, how many hours do they need to be in my stomach for them to count? Because I kept on throwing them back up again. So I was really worried. And they would just be like, oh, it'll be fine. It's just morning sickness. It's a good sign. Congratulations. And oh, I heard that so many times. I'd go to the pharmacy, like, pale as a sheet, like, on the edge of throwing up, and they'd be like, congratulations. I'd just be like, oh.
Surreal.
Yes. And I think the difference with IVF was really big for me. With IVF, with the hyperstimulation, everybody took me really, really seriously. Immediately they were like, okay, you're ill, we have to take care of this, we'll scan you. But with this, like, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink, I felt truly horrific, and nobody seemed to care. Everybody was just like, well, that's pregnancy, good luck to you, enjoy it. And that made me really angry and upset, which is why I ended up writing that post.
Yeah, it's really good that you wrote it. It's like, it's apparently, there's this romantic idea about pregnancy, that it's all like on a pink cloud, as you would say in Dutch, and that, like, it's only positive, but like, if you're sick, you're sick.
Yeah, and the thing is, you're not even really allowed because of society to just crawl in your bed for 3 months. Because first of all, you can't just start telling everybody just yet because it's too early. You might still be dysentery. And second, you're going to be pregnant for a very long time. So it's not like a flu where you could just be 1 week. You know, I had all these months and I had the school assignments to get to and classes and I had to do all my hours and just, I couldn't stop. I had to keep on going even though I was puking in between you know, breaks or in hotels and in airport bathrooms. And it just, it was crazy. Looking back on it now, it was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't feel like I had the luxury to just stop, because who does that? And yeah, so I ended up losing quite a bit of weight, and just from the not eating. So at this point, I'm at 16 weeks and I'm finally back at the weight where I was before I got pregnant.
Wow. Like surreal.
Yeah, so I haven't gained anything yet, except a belly, but
yeah. Yeah. So it's so weird that doctors just don't take that seriously. Like I hear this and I think like, they should have given you some IV fluids or just some guidance, like what to eat, like, or maybe like some nutritional drinks or.
Yeah, all that it says like online, you have the criteria before you have like the, what's it called? The grave throwing up disease that Kate Middleton had, that everybody knows about. That's the serious one. So before you can have that one, you need to lose 10 pounds and then they're willing to like admit you to the hospital for IV fluid, which is a stupid, you know, you just wait for that one number and then you're sick enough, apparently.
Yeah, it's so strange.
It's like waiting for it to happen and
waiting for it to be like super, like, crisis, waiting for it to be a crisis before helping you, basically. Yeah.
And then I read like the baby books and it says nowhere in there. It says like, oh, you might feel nauseous once upon a time, but again, try eating a ginger biscuit, you'll feel better. And I got so cynical seeing that stuff. I was like, you lied to me, all of you lied to me.
Yeah, I can imagine. I would be so angry.
How long did you try the ginger biscuits?
Oh, I couldn't stand the smell of ginger without like, throwing up as soon as I smelled it.
Yeah, so I think we didn't really talk about the blog yet. So why did you start the blog and what was it like to openly talk about these experiences?
I think it was my idea, just because you'd been doing so much research and it was all really useful stuff that was so hard to find anywhere else, that I just was like, oh, you should really start a blog and it might help some other people who are going through a similar situation. So that was kind of where it started.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I have nothing to write about. I was wrong.
Yeah, so I mean, Nayla does most of the writing. She like is a writer anyway. Yeah, it's. I think for me, it's really useful because I have an absolutely terrible memory. So I think it's going to be like just really useful for us to have this record of how we were feeling in these moments for the future. And I think I'm mostly in charge of our Instagram account.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I really love the kind of sense of community that's brought and seeing that we're not alone in going through all of these crazy situations. Everyone is different. But there are so many people out there who have been struggling with these kinds of similar things. And it's been really supportive and everyone's been so nice. And yeah, it's been a kind of rock for us to lean on a bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I really love all the people who reach out and then say like, oh, me too, but I never said so. Like, especially with the last time being ill, so many people messaged me like, oh, that was me too, but I never told anyone, or I never came out about it, or I never. So to me, it feels like, well, somebody's got to say it, so why not me? And yeah, about the doctor things, when it goes bad for us, bad experiences, all of that too, I really do feel like I want to be public about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so much of this process, you feel really powerless and in the hands of other people. And through doing the blog and having a bit of a social media presence, I think it feels a bit like taking some of that power back.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about our podcast.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's like you make it more of your own project.
Yeah, and you get to have your voice out there in the world. It's not always just people telling you how it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So we have like a sort of time gap between when we record stuff and when we put it out in the world. Do you have the same thing with your blog?
Yes. Yeah, I think because it's mainly me writing all the entries, it's usually 2 or 3 weeks late, something like that.
And in part, like with the pregnancy announcement, just because we wanted to have a little bit more time to process it just between us and tell our closest friends and family first.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes it just takes some time for me to process and to really think it through and then only write it down.
I really, really like your blog. It's just so nice to, it was so nice to read about your experiences.
Well, yeah, you're much more of a reader than I.
Yeah, I really like the, researcher and the information hungry one of the two of us. Like, yeah. I'm also always reading everything. So yeah, it's so nice to read about other people's experiences, especially like other queer couples.
Yeah, but do you like in Ghent know other
good question.
Lesbian couples with children or trying to get pregnant or
how is that? Loads of lesbians. In part because I'm part of the feminist movement here in Ghent, so I know lots of trans people and non-binary people as well here, but most of them are child-free. Yes, like explicitly do not want to have children. So we're, in our close circle of friends, we're the first ones to have a baby.
Yeah,
a bit more distant friends, we do know people trying, but yeah, we're trailblazers.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
Do we have any other questions? Do you have any message for our listeners? Something really important or just
message?
Yeah.
For the listeners. Yeah.
Well, I think I've already said it. Do your research.
I think for me, finding your tribe is a good one. Like, don't be afraid to reach out to other people because they will surprise you and support you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not on your own going through this.
No, that's right. Yeah.
True. Thank you.
Yeah, like we do now.
Yeah.
Finding...
You reach out, we reach out.
Yes.
We reach each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to you about, for telling your story. And I'm so happy for you, all pregnant, and so glad for you that the first trimester is over. And because you're feeling better now, right?
I am feeling a lot better, yes.
Yeah, that's so good to hear.
Mm-hmm. And where can our listeners find your blog?
They can find our blog at memamas.com and we're memamas on Instagram.
Memamas.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll put it in the
show
notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
So
Everybody
can go there in one click. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for asking us.
Thank you.
Zoveel dank voor de fantastische meemama's, Joe en Nele, voor dit mooie interview. De meemama's zijn te vinden op Instagram en Facebook onder de simpele handle @meemama's, gewoon aan elkaar en zonder apostrof. En ze hebben ook hun eigen website www.meemama's.com.
Dank natuurlijk ook aan de Zweedse punkband Kathem voor de muziek. Je speelt hun naam als K-A-T-T-H-E-M-M en ze zijn onder andere te beluisteren via Spotify.
Dankjewel Paula Lina voor het monteren van de intro. Check ook haar website www.middenoor.nl.
Illustrator en transpapa Joris Bas Bakker maakte ons logo. Volg hem op Instagram onder de handle @JorisBasBakker. En let op, Bakker schrijf je met CK.
Volg ons op Instagram en Twitter onder @mensjeindemaak. Of op Facebook door te zoeken naar Mensje in de Maak. of bezoek onze bescheiden website op www.mensjeinemaak.nl.
Vergeet vooral ook niet om je review achter te laten in Apple Podcasts. Dat kun je trouwens ook doen als je wel een Apple-telefoon hebt, maar niet via deze app luistert. Ga naar de app Podcasts, die je automatisch op je telefoon hebt staan, en klik het aantal sterren aan dat je onze podcast waard vindt. Oh, en abonneer je ook via dezelfde app op onze show. Het lijken kleine handelingen, maar als je dit soort dingen doet, helpt dat enorm om ons via de ranking omhoog te krijgen.
En doe dat vooral ook op Spotify. Vorige keer vertelde ik al dat we op plek 32 stonden. Nu staan we al op plek 13.
Ja, wow.
In de categorie Kids en Familie. We vermoeden dus dat jullie je flink hebben zitten abonneren op ons. En dat blijkt dus daadwerkelijk te helpen. Keep up the good work, lieverds.
En tot volgende week allemaal.
Doeg!